Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
Disappointed.
Oh, what a great start. Why are you disappointed?
I cannot explain the level of guttedness that I am feeling.
Why are you experiencing such high levels of guttitude?
Because of, sorry, I don't know if that's a word, but I like it.
Guttitude. I don't think it is.
Let's put that out there as a new word.
What's
because,
up?
Well, the Northern Lights, Ben.
Oh, I was pissed off about this as well.
So I woke up Saturday morning, Ben, to discover that on Friday night, there had been this incredible show of the Northern Lights across the UK, and it would have been beautifully seen where I am in London. The worst thing was on Friday night, I'd been out till about 9:30, which I know was a little bit early, but I could have looked up in the sky and seen something. I didn't even think of looking up at the sky. So then they said, oh, don't worry. Don't worry if you've missed it on Friday night, because Saturday night, they'll be there again. So Saturday night, it said 10:30. That's the time.
Yeah.
Go out at 10:30. So out I trotted at 10:30, looked up at the sky. Fuck all. I came back in. I thought I'd give it another hour. Went out about 11:30, looked up at the sky. Fuck all. Went to bed feeling dejected, depressed, upset. But then don't worry, because on Sunday it said, another chance. Tonight you can see the Northern Lights again. So Sunday night came. I'm excited. Okay, right, tonight's the night. 10:30 came. The witching hour. The Northern Lights hour. Out I went. Fuck all. Gave it another hour. 11:30. Went out. Fuck all. I now think the chance has gone, from what I understand. It's all over, done and dusted. Now, what annoys me about this is that Saturday, everywhere you looked on the news, newspapers, oh, the Northern Lights, fantastic, wow, the Northern Lights, see them again tonight. Where was the warning on Friday? Why didn't my phone ping, like you get a breaking news thing on your phone, breaking news, Taylor Swift's changed her set order, and then you get nothing. Yep. Nothing on your phone to say Northern Lights, the most extraordinary thing you're going to see in your lifetime. Where's that breaking news coming to my phone? Tell me if it's going to happen, for Christ's sake. I've been trying to tick this off my bucket list for years. The one chance I have, and what do I see? Fuck all.
I'm afraid I had completely the same experience. I had not a whiff, not a hint of the Northern Lights until Saturday morning, when I couldn't move for people talking about the Northern Lights.
Everywhere you look, photographs of people from their flats in Croydon. Northern Lights. Fuck all Saturday. Fuck all Sunday.
Oh, I was gutted. And like you, I tried Saturday night, wandered onto the patio, looked up in the sky.
Nothing.
Nothing at all. I was devastated. And then I heard it was like the clearest, the best chance us Southerners have had in like the last 20 some odd years.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, it's a once in a lifetime thing, probably. You know, now I do have to do that bucket list thing that I've always thought, oh, when I'm older, I'll go and do the thing. I'll go to, I don't know, Norway or Finland or somewhere, and I want to stay in one of those sort of pods that have sort of a glass ceiling and look up. I thought, well, that's always been the thing. But, you know, I could have saved myself a few quid and seen it from a garden in Thornton Heath. I just think if these sorts of things are going to happen, they should send texts. Somebody, the BBC News should tell me that it's happening.
I agree. I was very much like you. I get breaking news nonsense on my phone all the time. Look, breaking news. And I'll open it and it'll say, Prince George smiles for photo.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
This isn't news.
Politician speaks to Laura Koonsberg. Like, well, that's her job. That's not breaking news.
I think for this phenomenon in the skies, nothing. But for inane nonsense, I get breaking news alerts. And by the way, I might be able to save you a little bit of money.
Yeah,
I have it on relatively good authority. I've never done it myself, but you can see the Northern Lights pretty well from Scotland.
I think there are places in Scotland you can go and do it. And a friend of mine's actually done it where you fly, I guess, from London, but the plane goes up to Scotland and sort of does a flight pattern while the lights are happening. So you can do that. But the only thing about being on the plane, as I understand it from him telling me, is that obviously, you know, there's only a certain number of window seats. So you get to see them for a little while and then you have to move. And I think, no, if I'm seeing the I don't want someone else taking my seat to see the Northern Lights. If I'm seeing the Northern Lights, I'm seeing it for the duration of the flight. Thank you.
Well, And also, I don't want to be, throwing you out of the proverbial plane window or anything, but we had a lovely little meet-up during the week. We went to see a lovely show. It was very good.
We did.
And on the way home, I suggested, because it was getting quite late and you wanted to hang around afterwards for a quick drink and maybe see if we could meet the star and all that sort of lovely stuff. And it was getting quite late. There was a train strike on, and I suggested, Trev, mate, why don't you part with a bit of your cash, get a lovely cab home, be home in half the time. But no, dare I say, a bit of a skinflint, insisted on navigating public transport around a train strike at midnight to get yourself back to Thornton Heath. I don't see you taking off to Scotland to see the Northern Lights via jet anytime soon.
Oh, you know, the money I earn, I've got to be frugal, mate. I can't be parting cash willy-nilly for Ubers here, there and everywhere. By the way, can I just say that we did see the star of the show. We did queue up for an autograph and a photograph with him. This was Count Arthur Strong for people. See, this is the thing. I've been talking to people about this since we saw it. And Count Arthur Strong is a bit of a cult comedy figure. So most people I've said this to go, what?
Who?
Who? And then I show them the photograph and they go, who's that? You've got to discover Count Arthur Strong for yourself. He was a radio show to start with. He had three TV series. He does these one-man shows. Anyway, we went to see him. We queued up for an autograph. Can I just say, I was a little bit starstruck.
I noticed you getting a little bit jittery. It was like,
I was nervous.
It was like being around a sort of teenage girl around Take That in the 90s. I thought I was going to give you a hard slap to the face to shake you out of it.
I almost cried as I met him. No, it was, I was genuinely a little bit starstruck. But anyway, as we were coming home, you're right, I went and got a train. That was Thursday night. There was no Northern Lights then. I mean, I would have been out and about. You know, late at night, I would have seen them.
So are you now going to have to part with some cash and sort out this bucket list itch to go and see the Northern Lights?
Well, of course. I mean, it's always been on my list to do. So this hasn't really changed that. But had I've seen them, I would have thought, well, I don't have to do the trip to Finland now. It's the sort of thing I keep thinking, when I retire, I'll get a plane to Finland or Norway or wherever it is and go see the Northern Lights.
Could you now maybe double up on your bucket list now that you're having to sort of travel? Could you do see whales swimming or swim with dolphins? Could you, tick them off in the same trip to Norway or Iceland or wherever you can best see the Northern Lights?
I mean, I'm not that bothered about swimming with dolphins. I've never quite seen the appeal of swimming with dolphins. Seeing whales, that would be quite cool. When I was in New Zealand, my friend said to me, I went to stay with a friend in New Zealand, and he said, what is it you want to do when you're here? And I went, he told me about this place. And he said, we can go to Kaikoura, that's where the whales are. And I said, well, that's where I'm going. That's where we're going. So as soon as I arrived, we get in his car and we drove 3 hours or whatever it was to get to Kaikoura, right? And there was a helicopter you could go up in and go and possibly see whales from
possibly
the sky. Well, this was the thing, right? Because I was on a very, I don't want to come across as miserly, but I was on a very strict budget for this
again
holiday. Well, no, I was
Scrooge.
I was on a very strict budget, so I went and spoke to the helicopter pilot, and it was like, it wasn't hugely expensive. It was like 80 quid to go up or something. But he did say to me, I will tell you, we haven't seen whales for quite a few days. And I thought, basically, this is just going to be a helicopter trip, isn't it? And I declined to go and do it. So I have still to see whales. I did go, I say I'm not interested in swimming with dolphins. I did go out on a boat to see dolphins in the wild, but not to swim with them, but to see them from the boat. That was pretty incredible.
I have seen dolphins in their natural habitat, and I have seen whales when I was a child. I saw them at SeaWorld in America.
Oh, I saw them at SeaWorld. That's not quite the same. Yeah, I mean,
well, I was
seeing killer whales being essentially tortured.
Yeah,
for entertainment.
When I was a sort of 9-year-old, I thought, well, this is very impressive. I've seen these amazing beasts, and now as I grow older, I sort of feel a bit grubby about the whole thing.
I know, I'm exactly the same. I went to Florida. I mean, I was, this was, 14 years ago? I must admit, the whole whale show, even though I sat through it, I did sit through it thinking, this doesn't seem right. I know the stories of them basically kidnapping baby orcas from their mothers in the wild, but I didn't have the same feeling about the dolphin show. And I wonder what that says about my mentality, because the dolphin show, I had no guilt about that. I thought it was just brilliant. Right? It's the same level of cruelty, isn't it? Keeping these dolphins out of their wild habitat, training them to do jumps and tricks for fish.
I wonder if it's just a sort of spatial awareness problem, because the whales are so much bigger that it seems a bit more enclosed, whereas the dolphins seem to have a bit more space because they're a lot smaller.
Yeah, and what was really weird was a month or 2 months or so before I was at SeaWorld, one of the whales had killed one of the trainers.
Yes, they do tend to go rogue now and again.
So we had to start the show with a tribute to the trainer and a moment's silence, because they'd only just started the shows again. And there was a bit of me thinking, wouldn't it be better if you said no more whale shows, you know?
Yeah.
And when there's a film, is it called Dark Waters or something like that? It's on Netflix. It's a really difficult watch, but it's worth watching because it shows the level of cruelty that goes on. And actually, that I think the whale that killed the trainer at Florida a few times before I was there had history, but you know, it was being kept out of its habit. Yeah, anyway, it's a really dark subject we've got into.
No, it is. But I'm very curious about how they managed to sort of circle that square in their mind before they carried on with the show. Like, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for observing that very thoughtful moment silence for our fallen colleague. Now, on with the show. We've learned nothing.
I know. It was incredibly kind of... the juxtaposition between mourning and joy was quite bizarre. But yeah, but all I suppose all they think is we got to keep the bucks coming in. You know?
Do they still do that at SeaWorld, or have they sort of given up with the orcas?
I'm not sure. I think it might still happen. I'm not entirely sure. But anyway, seeing whales in the wild, that's a bucket list thing. I don't have too much more on my bucket list. I wanted to see the space shuttle go. I do want to go back and see if we ever get the rocket launching off to take people to the moon again. I would quite like to be there for that.
Speaking of missed bucket list opportunities, I forgot to mention, I almost texted you earlier in the week before we met up because I got a funny enough, a notification on my phone to say live on YouTube now rocket launch. And I thought, hey, up. And I checked it. And it was, I think it was, who's your man? Elon Musk, Rocket Man. Yeah. I think he was launching something. And I clicked on the video and I was just about to text you to say, oh, quick, get onto YouTube, live rocket launch happening. Yeah. I'm not sure where it was going or where it was taking off from. But when I clicked on the video, it was just a live feed of what looked like an empty platform. And I thought, well, one of two things has happened here. Either it's I've gone. Missed it taking off, or another one of Elon Musk's has gone up in flames. I'm just left looking at what's left. So that's why I didn't bother texting you, because I thought I'd missed the main event, whatever it was.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that was. I suspect he was putting up more satellites or something. I don't know. I lose track of what he's sending up these days.
So you've been to, was it Cape Canaveral?
Cape Kennedy, Cape Canaveral. Yeah.
Is it the same thing?
Yes, yeah, same thing.
Why has it got two different names if it's the same thing?
When it was Cape Canaveral, then it was called Cape Kennedy after the assassination of President Kennedy.
What a strange time to have a rebrand. But then, to commemorate an assassination. What?
Well, they've got to commemorate him because he was the man who said, you know, we've got to go to the moon. It was his vision, wasn't it?
He said, fair enough.
You know, we choose to do these things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. That's my impression of JFK.
JFK the pirate, yes.
Oh,
Long John Kennedy, as he was known.
He had an odd accent, it went all over the place, but I'm just replicating it as accurately as I remember.
So you've seen your rocket launch.
Yeah.
You want to see whales in the wild. You've missed the Northern Lights. So
I'm not
whales...
I missed the Northern Lights. They're still out there. There's still possibilities to see them. I've just missed the best opportunity to see them from my own home.
The freebie, the one you were hoping for the most.
I did once see what I thought was just a glimmer of the Northern Lights when I was in Malta, and I was sitting on the balcony looking out at the sea, and there was like an odd shimmering in the sky, just very briefly. And both me and my friends, we just went, what was that? That was weird. And then we didn't think anything of it. And then a couple of days later, I was reading that there had been a little bit of Northern Lights action in and around that area. So I think I did just see a glimpse of it, but not enough to satisfy my voracious appetite for the Northern Lights.
So I'm trying to find out where the next best place is for you to see the Northern Lights. And I'm getting Tromsø. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Tromsø in Norway.
Norway, right. So that's where I've got to go.
Or Swedish Lapland, Reykjavik, yeah. In
Canada,
Iceland.
You can go to Canada, can't you? Canada's a good place. Because that's another thing on my bucket list is a log cabin by a lake in Canada in bear country.
I mean, dare I suggest again? I mean, Mr. Flash with his money, have you got Canada cash on you?
Well, not at the moment. You know, I'm still hoping... Ben, I've got enough time left to make a success of my life. I've spent the first 30 years of my working life scrabbling around for pennies on the floor. You know, but I'm still hoping at some point somebody's going to go, I tell you what, here's a man we can pay a lot of money to.
To be honest, I'm surprised when I met you for that show midweek that you didn't sort of get there on a skateboard or maybe cycle there or something.
To be honest, I would have walked had my foot not been fucked. I mean, I was limping around like anything. I mean, that's the problem, right? I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, the pain that keeps going around my body. That moved and I had a new pain in the foot. Otherwise, I probably would have walked there, mate, saved some cash.
Wouldn't that be a terrible shame if 65 years of scrimping and saving and buses during a train strike and all that shit, just to save up for your retirement, for your bucket list, and you're forced to spend it on a comfortable pair of orthopedic shoes? Now, Trev, speaking of not having quite enough money as you might hope,
yeah,
I ended up going down a bit of a rabbit hole on TikTok and YouTube this week, all about money, especially Americans and their money.
Right.
And at the risk of offending our cousins over the pond,
I think I've already done that with my JFK impressions.
They don't know how to do money right at all.
What do you mean they don't know how to do money right?
Well, for a start, they often have a dig at us for the way we live and things like that. And the big one that we come back with is, well, we don't, you know, have to bankrupt ourselves every time we have to have an ingrowing toenail sorted out at the doctors or call an ambulance if we're going into labour or things like that. You know, that's not going to cost us the rest of our, you know, savings financially forever. And I came across this amazing story of, there was someone who, there were three winners of a big, and I mean big, lottery jackpot.
Okay.
So it was a $1.6 billion jackpot.
Wow.
And one of the couples who won their third share of it, they were given a choice. You can have it now in a lump sum, but you can't have it all in a lump sum.
Right.
You can have about 300 million of it now in a lump sum and that's it. Or you can have about 500 million, your total amount, but we'll slowly deal it out to you annually. You'll get an annual chunk for 30 years. That's the only way you can get your full whack that you've won.
That seems a better option, but I mean, it seems very unfair that if you've won the lottery and you've won a share of the jackpot, for them to suddenly say, oh, well, if you want sort of a lot of money right now, it means you haven't actually won your fair share of the jackpot. That seems a really unfair, unjust way of doing it. I don't like that at all.
I completely agree. Now, can I... I'm going to give you another key piece of information in a second. If this was your winnings, your choice, Trev, you've won. You can either have 300 million today, job done.
Yeah.
Or we can dole out your 500 million to you over the next 30 years. What would you like? And the key piece of information I will give you is if you drop dead tomorrow, your estate will continue to receive that money. It's not like it dies with you.
Oh, okay. Because that's what I was going to say. You know, if I was to say, well, look, I'll... If you give me $300 million now, then that's it. Because then if I pop my clogs, the money's in hand, I've got it. And I thought, well, you know, if I say I'm going to have it slowly and then pop my clogs and then it just goes back into the coffers of the company that run the lottery, then that would be unfair. But no, if it continues, that would make more sense. Then you've set up your ancestors for a long time, haven't you? That seems a much better way of doing things.
And I've done some maths. I've had the calculator out this afternoon, and oh, basically you're looking, if you choose the 30-year option, you're looking at around 17 million a year. In fact, if you want me to be extremely specific, this might change your thinking. Are you a superstitious man?
Not particularly.
Okay. The $500 million split over 30 years would pay you out annually $16,666,666.
Bring it on. It's a deal with the devil. Come on.
That's a lot of sixes, my friend.
No, that wouldn't bother me. That wouldn't bother me at all. I tell you what, I could live on that. Wouldn't be a problem.
So would you go for the 30-year option?
Of course I would.
So what happened was this couple basically decided, sod it, just give us the $300 million now.
Right.
And they willingly, I mean, you can't feel too sorry for them because A, they've got $300 million and B, this was their choice, but they basically washed their hands of $200 million.
Yeah.
I mean, that's astonishing, isn't it?
It's dumb. It's dumb.
So I thought that seems pretty cruel with the American lottery, but I think it's actually not unheard of that could happen with the UK lottery as well. I continued, by the way, my calculator has been melting this afternoon. I continued with what I consider to be another scandal of scandals.
Okay.
Do you remember? It happened back in 2004. The very famous Oprah Winfrey thing where she gave away a car.
I do remember this. Yes.
Everyone.
Yes, she offered everyone in the audience a car.
Yes. Did you know that audience, and this is very important, this little fact, there were 276 members of the audience.
Right.
And they were all hand selected by their financial situation.
Okay.
Because there was a big PR stunt with the people who made the Pontiac G6 car. There was initially going to be about 11 of these cars given away, and Oprah and her production team haggled somehow to get them to give 276 cars away, totaling nearly $10 million worth of cars.
Budget for a car company, that's probably pocket money, isn't it?
Well, it's big. It's money that could have been much better spent. It could have got them a 90-second advert of the Super Bowl, that sort of money. And also, not to bore you with cars, because believe me, this bores me too, but the Pontiac G6 is kind of a guy's car, from what I've learned. And not to be too sexist about the whole thing, but Oprah Winfrey show, not really a big guy audience. So not very, you know, well with the money being spent there. So they managed
to put, like, some, you know, like, have you seen those cars? Those cars with, like, the eyelashes on. Put them on.
I haven't seen one of those in years. What happened to those?
I saw someone fairly recently. I thought, oh, there's a blast of the past.
So basically, these people were hand-selected. What's your income? How, you know, do you have a car? Blah, blah, blah. So basically, if you're looking at it from a charitable angle, the 276 audience members were handpicked as the people who would most need a car.
It doesn't sound much wrong with us at the moment.
Wait for it, my friend. Wait for it. So then Oprah does her big stunt. She gets 10 or 11 people on stage. You've all won a car. And then she says, oh, and there's an extra mystery car in the room for someone. Just look under your seat. And if you find a box with it, and if you open the box and it's got a key in it, then you've won a car. And then, of course, all of the audience members go under their chairs. They all find a box. They all open the box and they all find a key.
Wow,
what magic.
Yeah.
Oprah goes into overdrive, pointing at the crowd. You win a car. You win a car. You've seen the clip.
Yeah, we've all seen it.
What a lovely bit of TV that is. Everyone's won a car. Isn't that fantastic?
Oh, I bet there were tears aplenty.
However, this is when the American prize swizz kicks in. It turns out that these weren't considered gifts from Oprah to her audience. They were specifically considered prizes. And as such, everyone who received one of these needed to pay the prize tax imposed by the states.
Oh, that's wrong.
So for the car, they had to pay £7,000 worth of prize tax. Sorry, $7,000 worth of prize tax.
But if these people are not in a financial situation to have a new car, that's why they've been picked. They won't have $7,000 to hand over to the tax man, will they?
Precisely the problem, my friend. So, this was, like I say, targeted at the people who had the least, so couldn't afford to cough up the £7,000. So those who couldn't cough up the $7,000, had to forfeit the car because they couldn't afford the prize tax.
Really?
Because here's the thing. If Oprah had gifted them the car, then the tax would have had to have been paid by Oprah Winfrey herself.
Oh, but she's smart, isn't she?
Because they were, in quotes, a prize, the recipient had to pay it and often couldn't afford to. So this is such a blowing up in your face prize. Also, now I can preempt where this is going. You're going to say, Ben, why couldn't Oprah, being as rich as she is, pay the tax herself?
Or the car company?
Well, the car company had kind of done their bit, in fairness. They'd given away $10 million worth of free cars. But I've done the maths on it. $7,000 over 276 cars is Oprah Winfrey would have had to cough up to say, I'll foot this one, guys. Don't worry, have a free car. She'd have had to cough up $1,932,000.
Pocket money for her, isn't it? Surely.
And she didn't. She didn't cough it up. They had to pay it themselves. Lots of people couldn't afford it. Lots of people had to forfeit the car. And now you're going to say, well, she could afford it. $1 million. I mean, that's nearly $2 million. $1,932,000, isn't it? Nearly 2 million.
Yeah.
I've done a bit of, whilst my calculator was melting, I did a bit of side Googling.
Yeah.
In 2004, Oprah was worth $1.1 billion.
Yeah, there we go. Pocket money.
So I've done the little equation. What's 1.9? I wonder if people are still listening.
I doubt it, mate. I mean, I'm losing the will, to be honest.
Basically, she would have had to pay out 0.18% of her net worth to foot the bill to pay this tax on these cars.
There you go. Do it.
Now, I've done that on my annual income. And if you take my annual income, not my weekly, not my monthly, my annual income, and charged me 0.18% to cover the bill, it would be the equivalent of me having to pay £40.25. Now, I know I've bamboozled you with numbers there, so I'll give you a much simpler one to finish on once again, how the Americans don't know how prizes are supposed to work. Do you remember back in 1999... Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was won by a guy called John Carpenter, who didn't use a single lifeline until the final question.
Yeah, was that? Did he just ring his dad to say, I'm just about to win $1 million? Was that the guy?
Yeah, he didn't even want to know the answer. He just called his dad. Lovely bit of television history just to say, Dad, I'm going to win the million.
And he did. JFK.
So, yeah. However, once again, American prize tax kicks in. How much of the million do you think John Carpenter saw?
Oh, well, it depends on the percentage of the tax in the state, I suppose. Let's say he saw 850,000.
He saw $600,000 of his $1 million winnings. And the real kick in the pants, John Carpenter knew this wasn't enough money to live the rest of his life. He couldn't just retire now, because it's a big sum of money, but not enough to retire on.
No.
So he had to keep up his job working for the IRS.
Well, what an irony.
The IRS being the American tax people, who he has just won $400,000 for. I mean, I hope he at least got Employee of the Month that month. So Americans really need to start upping their game as to what a prize is defined as. I mean, to go on to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, win the million, win the top prize, and then have to give nearly half your winnings to your employer. That's a kick in the bollocks, isn't it?
Wow. Because, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think I'm right in saying that it's certainly in the UK, prizes won on game shows are tax-free.
Yes.
I think I'm right in saying that.
Absolutely. In this country, any prize money you win, whether it be gambling, game shows, pub quiz, it's tax-free. You don't have to pay a penny.
I've often thought this about sports people. You know, when they get prize money, are they taxed on that? Because it's a prize for winning something. But, of course, it's their profession. So, of course, they're taxed on it. So that's a slightly different thing. But for just going on a game show...
No, I don't think so. I don't think you're right at all. I think if Ronnie O'Sullivan wins the Masters, I don't think he's taxed. It's a competition. It's prize money.
Well, darts players have to pay tax, don't they? So
are you sure?
Yeah.
Now, we're going to have to... We can't... I mean, after all my calculations and waffle, we can't leave it on this cliffhanger. I mean, because as far as I'm concerned, the golf, the Open, the darts, the Masters at the snooker, they're competitions, right? And that you win prize money.
Yeah, I don't think it works like that when you're a professional sportsman. I just don't think. I think it's a different. That's a different ball game entirely. As far as I'm aware, someone like Ronnie O'Sullivan or Phil Taylor, millions and millions of pounds they won over their years of being a professional sportsman. You can't just say, well, they didn't pay any tax on that. That would be a completely unfair way of running a society.
I've had a quick Google, and it would appear you're right, annoyingly, that they do have to fill in tax returns. But I fundamentally disagree with you entirely, because I would say we've had this argument before. People expect your expertise on certain things and expect it for a very cheap price because they perceive it to be easy. And the answer should be, well, you do it then if it's that fucking easy. And I would say, if you think it's that easy to win the Snooker Masters or go and hit 180 or do a 9-dart finish, you fucking do it. And then we'll talk about if you should pay tax or not, surely.
That's not a good enough argument, mate, because that's like saying, that they're just very, very good at their job. It'd be like saying, Ben, you are the best postman there's ever been. It's incredible the work you do. We've seen the way you put a letter through a letterbox. It's beautiful. We watch it in slow motion in training lessons. So you are the best postman there's ever been. You are the cream of the crop, and therefore you don't have to pay any tax on your earnings. I mean, that would be a ludicrous way of doing things, wouldn't it? So if it's your profession...
No, because unfortunately, no one has made the postal service into some sort of competition yet. I mean, unless it's some sort of race to the bottom, but otherwise it doesn't seem to be much of a race.
I mean, professional footballers, they have to pay tax. It's still a competition they're in, a league, a cup, it's a competition. They still have to pay tax on their earnings, don't they? So where do you draw the line?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, if you went down the local Mecca bingo hall tonight and won £1,000, you wouldn't have to declare that on your tax return, would you?
No, I don't think you would have to, no. But then it's not an earning. It's not your profession, is it? That's the difference. If you're a professional sports person, that's your earnings. It's your profession. And I think that's the distinction you have to make here, Ben.
Well, maybe I've spent too long slagging off our cousins over the pond. Maybe next week's homework will be a deep dive on the swizz of UK sports winnings.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be an interesting podcast, mate. I mean, I think we've already, we're hovering above the boredom line right now, to be honest. I mean, next week we're just going to be doing an accountancy podcast. Martin Lewis will be dealing with that shit, mate. Let him do it. We've done this. Talking of game shows, do you remember? I mean, obviously, I don't know what the outcome of this was. Do you remember that thing, Touch the Truck?
Was it Dale Winton?
I think it might have been Dale Winton. And the idea was that people could win the truck, but they had to keep their hand on the truck for the longest. And I think it went on for days. But people were sort of fainting. People were having delusional thoughts midway through, essentially having nervous breakdowns. And we saw that as great entertainment on the telly. I mean, honestly, it's the sorts of things that we put out as entertainment sometimes and prizes. Just have a, like, at least on something like Bullseye, you might win a truck, but you've got to throw a few darts for it. You can win a truck, but for five nights on a trot, you've got to have your hand on a truck. I mean, honestly,
I think the whole Touch the Truck thing, I think, came over from the States, believe it or not. And of course, the US does everything bigger and grander. I think they have had some fairly catastrophic outcomes where people have sadly perished because they were so keen to keep their hand on the truck that their bladders have burst and caused all sorts of terrible consequences that aren't really worth talking about. But yes, it's a strange import that... I think maybe since Dale Winton is no longer with us, maybe he took that concept with him, because I haven't seen it since that.
No, I think it ran for, it was a one season thing that, I think it was an early Channel 5 game show, maybe. I also remember Channel 5 when they launched did some really odd game show. I think it was like a one-off with Keith Chegwin hosting it where everyone was naked.
Oh God. Yes, I do have a vague memory of that. Yes.
And I don't remember what they had to do. It was like in a jungle sort of setting, I seem to remember. We think, well, who came up with that idea? And why Keith Chegwin said yes to that? I'm sure Keith Chegwin had enough work going on that he didn't need to accept that job.
Do you think? I mean, was Keith Chegwin ever in great demand, you know, circa 1999.
I think he would have still been. Well, maybe that's why he took it. Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he wasn't on telly so much, and they just phoned you up and said that we got this idea, but you do have to go on Stark Naked. And he went, yeah, right. I mean, yeah.
I mean, let's put it kindly. I don't imagine Jonathan Ross was sitting at home thinking, oh shit, I really wanted that gig, but no. Cheggers beat me to it.
I know, it's an extraordinary thing, but I don't know. But there's some game shows that really work, don't they? You know, the Chase. I love the Chase. I think that's great. Pointless is great. You got some old favourites like Jeopardy, the Wheel of Fortune. All those, you know, they're classic game shows. Bullseye. But just think, do you remember Robert Kilroy Silk? Was it called Shafted or whatever that game show was? That was a weird thing.
No, is this the same Robert Kilroy Silk who was quite controversially shafted from the airwaves? Or
because he used to do like a early morning sort of discussion show on telly, and then he was a politician back in the day before that, and then he went back into politics, but I think he had some questionable views that came to light and things he'd written and said, and then he disappeared. But yeah, he did a game show, he had this, what his catchphrase or something, like you had to choose whether to, it's something like to save or shaft.
Oh,
it was like a weird, weird thing. That didn't last very long.
No, and then so that slightly controversial man and TV show were removed from the airways, and you know, we all learned our lesson, and nothing controversial was ever put on daytime TV ever again, except Jeremy Kyle show.
Now, before we wrap up this week, Ben, I've got a couple of updates on things we've talked about over the last few weeks on the podcast. I thought I'd fill you in.
Oh, God, is this one of those terrible things when newspapers have to produce their sort of apologies and amendments to the libelous claims they've made the week before?
Well, one of them could be that. We'll come to that. The other one is, do you remember, I don't know when it was, last week, the week before, we were talking about emotional support animals.
Yeah.
And there was the alligator Wally that had been stolen.
Yes.
And we didn't know what happened to Wally the alligator, and the man who owned Wally was devastated because it was his emotional support alligator. But I do have an update on Wally.
Oh, I've got sitting here with bated breath. Tell me he's okay.
The truth is, we don't really know.
Well, how is this an update?
No.
This is the worst update ever.
Because what happened was, Ben...
Update, still don't know.
What happened with Wally is he was found, but the animal control people who got him assumed that it was a wild alligator and released Wally into the wild.
Because I remember you made some, and pun incoming deliberate, you'd made some wild allegation that...
Well, that's not been... even a pun, mate. That's just... It's just dreadful wordplay.
You'd made this allegation that he'd been sort of swept up by some mafia-style mastermind croc dealer or something. I'm sure you did.
I mean, it may well have been some mafia-type croc dealer that took him, but the point is... But the fact is that Wally was located, but he was then released into a swamp somewhere in Georgia. Now, the man who owned Wally has contacted Animal Control now and said, can you try to locate Wally in the swamp? But he's now been told the chances of them actually finding the right alligator are sadly next to zero. So Wally is in a swamp somewhere. He is safe, returned to the wild. But the man who owned Wally is probably never going to see me. I mean, I think if you were the animal people, you'd just get any old alligator, wouldn't you? We said this last time. How would you know it was Wally? Give it back. I mean, just say, oh, he was an alligator. It's Wally.
Yeah, but he looks different. Is he different? I mean, he looks a bit bigger than the last one. We were only here last week. He looks different.
Well, he was stolen. He hasn't eaten so much. You know, he's lost a little bit of weight. Yeah, but he was 7 feet long. He's now 3. I know, but... It could be Wally.
He's a different colour.
So it's a sad fact that I don't think the man is ever going to get Wally back, but Wally is safe. I think that's the... And Wally's probably better off being back in the wild rather than cooped up somewhere in someone's garden. Do you know what I mean?
I suppose if there had to be an update to this story, the fact that he's now returned to the wild and hopefully safe and well is the best possible update we could get.
I mean, it would have been nicer to say, well, you know, unfortunately, Wally... is no longer, but at least he's made the guy a lot of money. Several handbags have been sold. Alligator, he's been turned into alligator jerky.
God.
I've eaten a bit of alligator jerky. It's all right.
Where did you get your hands on that?
When I was in Florida, they sell it. Get a bit of alligator jerky, try it. It's fine.
What does it taste like?
Alligator. It's fine.
Oh, well, that's cleared that up there. Thanks.
I don't know what it is. It's hard to say, really. Just because the thing is, it's jerky, so it's all spicy. It just tastes like any other jerky I've ever eaten.
Yeah, because I've had jerky before, and it kind of just tastes a bit like shoe leather covered in spice.
Yeah, so it was like that, really. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. And what other updates have we got?
The other update is, I think it was last week, we were talking about Rod Hull and his...
Oh, yes.
And his sad demise. And Giles Brandreth claimed to be responsible for the death of Rod Hull.
Oops, behind the hit, yeah.
Well, there's now someone else who's come out and said that... I mean, we suspected the story might be nonsense, but now the Countess of Bradford has come out to say that word. She was responsible for the death of comedian Rod Hull.
Sorry. I really shouldn't laugh at the death of Rod Hull, but who would have thought 25 years later we'd be having multiple people coming forward to reveal themselves as the killer?
I mean, I'm tempted to say, because I met him once, I'm tempted to say I'm responsible for the death of Rod Hull. He met me and then threw himself off a roof. That's what happened.
So what's this woman's claim for the hit?
Joanne Miller claims that Giles Brandreth pinched her story and said he wasn't with them on the day, and she was with Rod Hull on the day he was complaining about his TV reception, and it was her who told him to go up on a ladder, and Giles Brandreth was nowhere near the conversation when that happened.
I mean, call me a cynic, but isn't it possible, isn't it feasible, that Rod Hull might have mentioned to more than one person on this day his TV aerial on his roof was playing up, and possibly more than one person thought, maybe you should go up and have a look at it, Rod? And maybe both of those people said to him on the same day, go up and have a look at it, Rod. Is that not possible, rather than he stole my story about killing Rod Hull?
I think this is like the murder mystery where they're all on a train and they've all done it. Everyone who ever met Rod Hull is responsible for his death. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, I've got some recommendations for you, Ben.
I'd just like to quickly intercept with one of my own, if you don't mind.
Go on, yeah.
It's the autobiography of Emu. And it's
How I Killed Rod.
If I Did It, the autobiography of Emu. And it's to do with how to convincingly tamper with TV signals, and with a catchphrase, if the HDMI cable doesn't fit, you must acquit. It's a good read.
I mean, I like the idea that a puppet has written an autobiography. Because has Sooty ever written an autobiography?
Well, Sooty couldn't speak. I mean...
Well, it doesn't mean he can't write an autobiography.
Well, he'd have to have a ghost writer, wouldn't he? Who'd be whispering to the whole time.
He used to struggle with a magic wand, let alone a pen. It'd be difficult to write, wouldn't it? And Sweep would just be fucking about the typewriter. And just piss off, Sweep. So annoying. Sue would be nagging. Sue would be nagging for the... Have you finished it yet, Sooty? No wonder he didn't talk.
On with the real recommendations.
Right. I think I might write Sooty's autobiography. I think I could do that. I was born in a factory. I was sewn together, and then I've spent a lifetime with someone's hand at my backside. Not allowed to talk. I've basically been kept prisoner my whole life by the Corbett family.
I mean, most of that could be some Z-list celebrity's life story. You never know.
Right, my recommendations for this week. First of all, on Netflix, it's a documentary called The Final, Attack on Wembley. And it's about the Euro final in 2021 when England played Italy. It's very painful to watch England lose it again. But it's the story of the people that stormed Wembley on that day. And I was obviously aware of the story and knew it was bad. But when you watch it, oh my God, these people were fucking dickheads. Like absolute morons. Horrible people. It made me so angry, Ben.
I don't really know what this story is.
Well, do you not remember, before the final, there was a thing about, oh, there's trouble outside Wembley, people are trying to get in. And it was loads of people turned up on the day without tickets, and they basically stormed Wembley to try and get in because they knew, because of social distancing, there was something like 23,000 empty seats, basically.
Oh, I remember now.
But they turned up, you know, early in the morning, got absolutely shit-faced. Well, apparently, there was lots of drugs going around. They interviewed a couple of people who took part in it who, I don't know, you sort of felt like you're not really apologetic for your actions. Like, there's one guy, there's pictures of him on top of a bus, absolutely hammered, and he's quite proud of that. And you think, you're a fucking cock, mate. It's just, do you know what I mean? You're the worst side of English football. The fucking morons that consistently ruin football in this country.
It's such a small number of people who do such a lot of damage to the reputation of football supporters. And like you say, they're not there because they give a shit about the sport or the team they profess to love or the enemy of the opposition they profess to hate. It's just an excuse for a piss up and a fight by some knuckleheaded morons.
But it is worth watching. It's just, it's interesting, but it made me angry.
Nice.
The other thing I'm going to recommend is on the BBC Sounds. It's a new comedy called Michael Spicer, No Room. Do you know Michael Spicer?
I do know Michael Spicer. Oh, hang on a minute. Am I getting him confused? No, I'm getting confused. I don't know who Michael Spicer is. No.
Who are you thinking of?
I was thinking of Michael Smiley, who played Tyres in Spaced and has gone on to many other things. Northern Irish actor.
Northern Irish. No, it's not him.
No, it was when I remembered his surname. That's what tipped me off.
Michael Spicer he made his name on Twitter and social media by doing a thing called, was it The Room Next Door, where he had clips of politicians giving speeches or being interviewed, and he would pretend that he was talking to them in an earpiece and telling them not to say stupid things, basically.
Yes, I now know exactly who we're talking about.
Yeah, and he's just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and he's just very, very funny. And he's got a new series called No Room. It's satire, topical, character-filled sort of sketches, really. They're only 14 minutes long. There's 6 episodes so far, and I'm really enjoying that.
Definitely give that a go, because good for him. That's a really nice rise to success story from coming up with all those little short videos. Yeah, and someone with actual talent being recognised. Yeah, good for him. I'll definitely give that a go.
So that's on the BBC Sounds app. Well worth a listen. And the final thing I'm going to throw in for this week, and I know you've watched this because we've discussed this ourselves, but we've talked a lot over recent weeks about Baby Reindeer.
Yeah.
And of course Piers Morgan did the big interview this week with Fiona Harvey, possibly the real Martha. Now, I felt incredibly dirty watching anything that Piers Morgan is involved with, because I absolutely despise the man, but I couldn't resist but watch this. I think that ultimately my opinion is I think she might have been a stalker.
This, listeners, is fascinating audio. This is the sound of a man walking on eggshells to try and not say anything libelous.
I don't want to say anything, and I don't want to be too cruel, mean. I think she comes across as very bizarre, is what I'm saying.
I think that's fair to say. I also do not particularly enjoy the work of Piers Morgan. It's about 50 minutes. If you're one of the few people who's been following the Baby Reindeer story and has somehow not seen this interview, if you could hold your nose long enough to listen to Piers Morgan, it's worth doing. It's a very fascinating watch. I would... Now you see I'm doing it too. I would have to say I would agree she seems like she was the person involved and is peculiar, shall we say.
Yeah. For me, there was just little bits I picked up on. The fact that she kept referring to BBC News as BBC Breaking News. I saw it on BBC Breaking News. Well, it's not called that. That's a weird thing to start with, isn't it?
A little highlight for me was in one breath, she bragged of her photographic memory and then what degree results she got.
Yeah.
Couldn't remember.
Yeah, and basically she said, well, it was in the 80s. Nobody went to college in the 80s to learn. They basically went to party. I don't think that's quite true, is it? Anyway.
I mean, we're not going to go into a deep dive because, believe me, other people have done it in depth. It's all out there if you want to find it, but it is a fascinating interview.
It's extraordinary. I just find their intakes of breath before answering a bit odd as well, but anyway.
I noticed that very sort of before every answer.
Yeah, it's like she's gasping. She's like, it's not really weird. Anyway, it's on YouTube. It's well worth a watch. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trevor and Ben on X, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe. Oh, by the way, tell me if there's going to be any more fucking Northern Lights, for Christ's sake. I'll have to get it on BBC Breaking News. See if I can get it.
We'll all have to be at the top of Rod Hull's roof, having the best view.
That's a bit snippy up there, mate. I'm not going up there. We'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe. Stay well. Take it easy.
Bye.